One of my favorite Miss Piggy moments is the scene in the Muppet Movie after the big fight in the barn. Piggy saves Kermit from Dr. Krassman, and they're about to leave when the phone rings. Kermit answers the phone. It turns out to be Piggy's agent, who tells her that she's booked a commercial. She tells her agent she'll take the job. She hangs up, and after the most exquisitely timed pause, she says, "Goodbye," and she leaves Kermit behind. Now, that's a very funny moment, but the thing that I really like is that her exit literally breaks the film. The movie that the Muppets are watching disintegrates before our eyes because the Swedish chef is having some kind of problem in the projection room. So there's a little scene in the theater. The film starts rolling again. Fozzie Bear sings America the Beautiful for not much of a reason. And then they spot Miss Piggy hitchhiking by the side of the road. Fozzie and Kermit stop to pick her up. She gets in the car. Movie continues. Now, just considering the storyline of the movie, there is no point to that little plot cul-de-sac. Miss Piggy leaves Kermit and leaves the film, and then a couple minutes later, she just comes back, and it makes absolutely no difference to the story. Really, they just wanted a funny Piggy exit and another funny Piggy entrance, and if that breaks the movie, then it breaks the movie. So that is what Miss Piggy is like. And today on the podcast, I am talking to the charming Brian J. Jones, author of Jim Henson: The Biography, about how this incredible character took on a life of her own.
I can't give you anything but love, baby. That's the only thing I've plenty of, baby.
Kissy kissy, and welcome to another episode of the Fantastic Miss Piggy podcast. I'm Danny Horn, and this podcast chronicles my journey to learn everything there is to know about that divine swine, the incomparable Miss Piggy. Today, I am very excited to have as my guest the attractive and talented Brian J. Jones, author of Jim Henson, The Biography, as well as biographies of Washington Irving, George Lucas, and Dr. Seuss. Brian, kissy kissy, welcome to the show.
Danny, kissy kissy, right back at you.
I'm so happy to have you here.
This is going to be great. Let's go.
Excellent. Do you want to tell the people about the Jim Henson biography?
Sure. I mean, it's hard to believe it's been 10 years, now getting on to 11 years that the biography's come out. It was a project that took me about 5 years to research and write. It's the first sort of, I mean, there's been books about Jim and his work before, but this is sort of the first comprehensive sort of grown-up biography of Jim Henson to come along, made possible due to the fact that the Hensons were very generous with their time and their resources. And I got to really dig deep into the Henson archives, and I got to see a lot of things that Muppet fans hadn't seen before and talk to some people I don't know if they'd heard of before. Just a really, really... a really deep dive into Jim's life and work that I hope even the most hardcore Muppet fans will pick up a thing or two out of the book they maybe have never heard of before.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's fantastic. It's, you know, it really enriches like our appreciation of the work to really understand the personality and the relationships. Mm-hmm. And there's so much of that in the book.
Yeah, I always talk about even with people like Washington Irving, like you can't understand the life unless you look at the work, and you can't understand the work unless you look at the life. It's sort of
right.
This prism you got of both. And Jim is definitely that way, and especially in that the guy, you know, from the time he was in high school is just constantly, constantly in motion, constantly pitching, constantly coming with ideas, constantly doing so. It's exhausting. So I just, you know, it's just the work was so much a part of who he was, even as he was so much part of his own work.
Yeah, it's, I mean, that's the thing that you really bring out in the sense that, like, in every period of his life, you're like, okay, and here's the three things that he has going on right now, and the thing that he's sort of thinking big picture about later on.
Yeah, and I know we have to get, I know we have to get back and talk about Miss Piggy, but like it's just what's always so incredible to me was his ability to sort of just walk away. Like when he his biggest thing, he'd always talk about how projects were lovely and how they were fun. You know, the Muppet Show, biggest show in the world, he takes it off the air because he has to go off and do movies and do something else. Fraggle Rock, gigantic hit, an international global phenomenon, takes it off the air so we can go off and do other things. I mean, only Jim. And I think it was Dave Goles who told me this or something. They said he had that amazing ability to just walk away. Really, really, you know, to like didn't fetishize any project. The point that he was like not going to let it go. Really fascinating.
Yeah, just always thinking ahead to the next thing.
Yeah.
Well, at the beginning of the show, I like to say something nice about Miss Piggy. I feel like every podcast should start that way. You know, like love it or leave it, sort of, you know.
Right.
Before we get started, let's say something nice about Miss Piggy. You'd be amazed how rare it actually is. So, Brian, I'll ask you, what's a favorite Miss Piggy moment for you?
Well, so for me, it deals more with the creative side of things. Mm-hmm. And what I love about Miss Piggy is how she was such a study in stick-to-itiveness and time and happy accident, and that she didn't emerge fully formed, that this was a puppet that was a back row character and then was passed back and forth between performers. And, and then Frank Oz finally gets her and doesn't still quite know quite what to do with her, and has that magic moment where she, as the famous story, which is true, that she's supposed to slap Kermit and he turns it into a karate chop. And even Jerry Joel says, there's a moment you knew that the character had arrived. So I love her as like sort of the ultimate Muppet example of like time and perseverance and finding that character. But again, such a happy accident. And the other thing I really love about Piggy, and this is another sort of behind the scenes thing, but Michael Frith, God bless him, he adored that character, and she was such a muse to him. I mean, he has that great painting he does of her where you see her bedroom and Kermit's slippers are under her bed, for crying out loud. I mean, I love what she brings Mike Frith, who just like draws and does, it's so beautifully done, but just clearly adored that character and really could be inspired by her. So I love Miss Piggy for those reasons. I'll stick with sort of those creative reasons on her. I really, really love how that character came about, and then the way she sort of inspired, people like Oz come up with these backstories, but Michael Frith as the artist just really inspired a lot of people inside the organization even.
So the thing that was amazing about what Frith did with Miss Piggy was to bring that into publishing, to create sort of essentially this like second wave of material that wasn't even really Muppet material. Like it
Right.
wasn't Muppet Show material, specifically like the calendars and getting into Miss Piggy's Guide to Life.
Yeah, and so creating, more merchandising for the Henson organization. But that was, I told this story before, but I had to really laugh years ago when there was, the Muppets started advertising, I think, for Toyota during the Super Bowl, and people were wringing their hands about Jim Henson and the Muppet commercial. And I just thought, man, the Muppet Empire was built on the back of commercials going all the way back to Wilton Coffee. And Michael kind of did that with them with publishing. It was money on the table, essentially. They had not really moved into that market, so it was just another example of them figuring out ways to make Muppets more accessible and more available, but also always maintaining that quality control. That's one of those things that Michael Frith does very well, that Jim Henson did very well, like maintaining that quality control, not just putting your name on everything, which might be one reason why we hadn't seen Muppet calendars before. They just didn't see a way to get in a way that they thought was classy and deserving of the Muppets.
A funny thing, kind of the real early merchandise, it took them forever to get a Miss Piggy doll out.
Yeah.
Fisher Price was doing like they did a Kermit and a Fozzie, and then they started doing characters like they did Scooter and Ralph and Animal, and the Miss Piggy doll didn't come out. And it was like a big deal like 2 years later when finally the first like Fisher Price Miss Piggy puppet comes out. And it my interpretation of that is just it took them that long to figure out how to do that right because they cared so much about the quality control. They weren't going to put something out that just didn't look right.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're absolutely right. It's sort of like if you're doing like a line of like Peanuts plushies or something, you don't do Snoopy for the longest time. Everyone's kind of scratching their heads going, why are you not releasing like one of your biggest hitters? And I think you're right. They wanted to be sure she was done. Now, did they ultimately do her with a hard head?
For the initial puppet, yeah, it was sort of like a plasticky head.
Yeah.
Later on, some folks kind of figured out how to make a plush Miss Piggy head, but it took a while. And
Yeah,
she's real
so
hard
yeah.
to do in plush.
Yeah, so I think that could be part of it right there. She doesn't lend herself to, to the softer, which may be indicative of Miss Piggy in general, doesn't sort of lend herself to the softer, edges that some of the other characters do. So yeah.
And so what do you think about kind of like how they put together the characters for the Muppet Show? Like what was Henson trying to do?
Well, so I mean, he was trying to create a troupe on there, sort of. And we always forget what a golden age of variety shows the 70s is. It's a perfect storm for doing something with a group, especially of characters, because every variety show in that, from Carol Burnett to Donnie and Marie to Barbara Mandrell, whatever, they always had sort of a core group around them that you could run. You'd bring in the funny one, and you had, like Barbara Mandrell, she had the sister that was sort of the doofus one, and then she had, so I always had everybody filling certain roles on all these shows. And I think Jim sort of had that in mind for the Muppet Show. But initially, Fozzie was supposed to be Frank Oz's main character, sort of, Kermit's right-hand man. And Piggy was a back row character. Coming off of Sex and Violence was not really a character they had developed or thought about. And so, the main characters were going to be Jim performing Kermit, which again puts Rolf in the back, which always sort of breaks my heart and Henson's heart as well, I think. But you know, Rolf was going to be Oz's kind of main character. I think Jerry was primarily still in there as the utility hitter, more than anything else, because he's not there. Is he there in the first couple of shows, Danny?
I think he's not. Yeah.
Yeah,
You don't
I think
see
he's not
Floyd
in
or
it. Yeah.
anybody. I think for the two that they filmed as a pilot, Jerry is sort of mysteriously not there.
Yeah, so then you've got Dave doing Gonzo. Anyway, you've got sort of that core group coming in again, to have sort of the primary universe around which everything else is going to revolve.
Right.
But Piggy's not, was not envisioned as one of the lead characters. Piggy doesn't really exist at that time, so she's not thought out or anything, and starts to evolve as the show moves. And that was one of the things that, again, when I was talking, I think it's Michael Frith again who said this. He said one of the great things about doing television in the 70s, especially syndication, was you did have that element of time that they weren't going to take your show off the air like they do today after 13 episodes or something. That they were, they still had their 26 and they still had time and they were even going to go into another season. And the Muppet Show is, I think we all will agree, like doesn't really find its footing until that next season. But, they had time. And so as things, they were able to pick up on things that they thought were working and discard stuff that they thought weren't. And that gave them time to when Piggy starts moving as a character, to start to figure that out. Even if they don't get it right the first time or the fifth time, they're still figuring her out as it goes. And that time luxury is something that you just don't get in modern day television.
When do you think they sort of realized that there was something actually special about Miss Piggy?
Well, I mean, Jerry Joel will tell you it's the karate chop that sold it, nothing else.
Well, how about like kind of when they saw it was connecting with an audience?
Gosh, I can't actually answer that. I don't know. I think internally they knew it right then. They knew they had something because, as Jerry Joel said, everyone stopped what they were doing. Like they knew they'd found something. Dave Rolls has that great story about, how Gonzo arrived when people stopped reading their newspapers around him. So, I think even just in production, they knew they'd found something. They might not have been sure what it was yet. And doesn't Oz talk about her being like a fashion model who's a truck driver or something like that? I mean, that's sort of his first take on her. When that karate chop lands, he's kind of like, okay, this is it. This is like somebody who thinks she's very glamorous, but is gonna, torpedo you with a right hook. And that in itself, I think, is funny. But then what Oz does, which is typical of Oz, is he starts, because he's got time, is he starts trying to figure that character out. And Oz, to the, frustration, I think, of Richard Hunt, and to the amusement of Dave Bowles, would write down these very elaborate backstories and histories of the characters. He had done it for
Where he's
somebody
really
like,
thinking about it, yeah.
yeah, he'd done it for somebody like, Marvin Suggs. Even and Sam the Eagle, and it's just it, but Oz talks about to this day, and it was Jim Henson's mentality as well, is that character was king. Are not funny until you start making their characters funny. Character is what's funny. Puppets aren't funny. The Muppet characters are funny. And I think Oz knows that character is king, and he starts really he's not going to just cut loose, I think, until he knows that
Really
he.
understands it, yeah.
And that's what's so great about the way somebody like Frank Oz performs. And Jim had even talked about this. It's why he handed Oz the keys to Yoda, is because he said, Frank's an actor. I mean, you want somebody like, you don't just need a performer. You need somebody who really thinks about this. And Oz, to this day, will tell you that he came up with Yoda's inverted syntax because he thought it sounded very elegant and old.
Oh, wow.
But that's something, Frank really thinks a lot about these kinds of things. And I think that's one of the reasons he's so funny, is because he's thought about the character's background and the character's motivations, their family life, that he knows exactly how that character is going to react at any time. I think that's one of the reasons Piggy is so funny. I think it's the reason Fozzie's so funny. I think it's just the reason characters that Frank Oz in particular does are so funny, because they are really well thought out, even though they look very simple.
Yeah, and it's funny that Fozzie comes so close to kind of having like that life inside of him, and it's essentially, like the big thing that Frank says about Miss Piggy is that she really wants to be loved. And that drives kind of everything she's doing. And it's actually exactly the same about Fozzie.
That's ex And he even says that about Fozzie. The bear just wants to be loved and appreciated. Yeah.
And I think Miss Piggy sort of had the extra thing that she had besides just sort of that inner motivation was then she had Kermit. She had this like story, a relationship that she wanted, something that's gonna kind of push her forward.
Yeah. But was it Frank says how she covets that little green body? Something
yes,
like that.
yeah.
But, you know, and I think that's part of what makes that character so funny is, you know, funny, especially because Kermit with the power dynamic in that relationship is hilarious. Even though he's the boss, I mean, it's like she could break him in half. But it's just, it's such a funny power dynamic to do with him.
How do you think they were feeling kind of as they saw Miss Piggy emerging as like her own phenomenon?
Well, you know, I think they realized she was taking over kind of on her own, even. I mean, there are never people to say the puppets have a life of their own, and Jim's never precious in that regard. But, you know, I think they knew they had a juggernaut on their hand. I think it's the reason Muppet Caper is primarily her movie, ultimately. Mm-hmm. It's just like she was the one, by that point, she was the one people were going to come to see, you know, and she is very prominent on the poster. Yeah, I mean, she's prominent on the Muppet movie poster as well, but in the context of Kermit, in the Muppet Caper, like she's on the motorcycle, like, but like it is like Miss Piggy is the star of the show. And I think they knew that. Now, the stories I love about, again, internally, mm-hmm. is who was telling, it might have been Oz again telling the story, but they said that was, you know, it was so funny. No, it might have been, I think it was Bonnie Erickson telling the story, who built Miss Piggy, talking about how they would, you know, they'd have Life magazine call and say, well, you know, we'd want to do a photo shoot with Miss Piggy. And so Bonnie said, you know, let me get on. And they'd call Frank and make sure Frank was available and so on. And they'd be all ready to go. And they said they'd get all the way down to the beach to do the photo shoot. And then the photographer would say, okay, we need Miss Piggy running along the beach here. And they'd say, okay, well, we need to, you know, dig a trench here now so we could put the performers on the cover. And they were like, what? Like she was so real to them. They completely forgot she had to be, you know, manipulated by others. They thought they could just take her out there and like she would run down the beach. You know, so she's so convincing as a character. You know, again,
Do you get that she does not have legs? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. She doesn't even have a lower half for the most part, you know, but it's, you know, it's like the stories you tell about Irvin Kershner directing Yoda. He would tell Yoda to move 4 feet to his left. And Oz is like, there's no hole in the floor over there. So, you know, the characters just take over. You know, I love the Muppet directors of the TV show talking about how they just call down the floor and they would give direction to Gonzo because they said it was just easier at that point to give direction to the Muppets rather than to the Muppet performers. So, but I think, you know, she was one that almost literally had a life of her own after that, that people thought they could just invite her to a party and she would come in and walk around, not realizing you had to invite Frank Oz to the party.
Once you get to the Muppet movie, she's got kind of a funny role in that. They make sure to give her like a big entrance and they give her some romantic moments and they give her a big action scene. But ultimately, it's not like a romantic movie.
Right.
The story is not.
It's not her movie. I mean,
And so then sort of the film kind of ends and it's focused on Kermit. And Piggy is just kind of like part of the team of friends that he's got, that he's mm-hmm. assembled.
Yeah, but you get to the second one, Caper, and she is front and center. You know, there was an interview with Jerry Joel, and I think I actually used this line in the book because it was really important, I think, to him and the rest of the writers, talking about how you have to be really careful with her. As they were saying, if you can't, you have to make her tough, you have to make her aggressive, but you can't make her a bitch.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, mainly because that upsets not her dynamic, but the dynamic of the entire Muppet organization. That you've got to be really careful with her on that. And, you know, and then that is, I think, you know, they would talk about her having a life of her own, but you had to, you know, it's like people who write novels talk about the characters getting away from them. I think that Jerry Joel and his team writing the Muppet Show, you know, were constantly worried about her getting away from them in that regard. And you had to really watch the way you would write her because, it, you know, having her, you know, throw Kermit around is funny, but it can't be too aggressive or mean-spirited or you lose the spirit of the Muppet chemistry.
There has to be like some kind of warmth.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things they always talk about what works with the Muppets is, you know, at the end of the day, they are going to come back together again. And, you know, I would think no matter how rough and tumble Piggy got, as long as you knew they all came back together. But I think you just had to be really careful. I think Jerry Joel in particular, I know, said you had to be very careful with her when you were writing her.
And unfortunately, I think that is something that once they made the sitcom in 2015, that they just straight up got wrong. They did not take that seriously. She really did just become cold and kind of not close to anybody.
You can make Miss Piggy a diva, but mm-hmm. it has to be done in sort of a self-aware way, if that makes some sense.
Yeah.
Like she, you know, she has to know that she believes she's a diva. God, I'm not explaining that well, but, you know, she has to almost be in on the joke, even though it's not really a joke to her. I mean, it's, you know, I always love, Oz was always so good about, and the current performers do this, but, you know, how she's always like touching her hair, you know, combing her hair back when she talks. I mean, that's like, she's in on it.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think that's one of the things they lost in the Muppets, and I think we're coming back to when that show got canceled, is they realized like she can't be a mean girl.
Right.
You
Yeah.
know, she's got to be a somewhat conflicted mean girl. But you know, she could be the boss, but she can't be mean, or you lose something about Piggy in that.
Right.
Plus,
Yeah.
then I think as a watcher then, or as a viewer, you're not rooting for her when that happens.
Right, when she's just
You
like kind of
can't have that.
completely cold. Yeah. And there's this sort of a tragic episode where it's tragic for me, seeing her when they go and do karaoke and she like is making friends with all the characters. And then at the end, to kind of bring it back to, because it's a sitcom, bring it back to baseline, they chop her out of that. And Kermit kind of convinces her that like, no, you can't have, you need, this boundary, this barrier between you and the other people.
Yeah, I mean, Kermit has that boundary between him and the other people. So, you know,
Which I think was a problem for the Muppets as well. Like just
yeah.
not having the kind of that warmth and connection.
Yeah. And again, it gets back to character is king on that. I mean,
Yeah.
the setup is part of it, but the setup by itself is not enough.
So going into The Great Muppet Caper, that's one of my favorite parts of your book is when you go into how much work they had to do to get Miss Piggy in the pool
Right.
and swimming.
Yeah, I love, you know, Jim always wanted in almost any project, but particularly in his movies, he always wanted what he called the how they do that moment. And that's really true with Piggy in the swimming pool. And I love, like, I mean, Bonnie Erickson, I think, still has scars to this day from it.
Yeah.
It was all about it. She became partly a science project because, you know, if you just took a regular Miss Piggy puppet and stuck it under the water, the foam head would just fill up with water, so it could form a big sponge. So you couldn't use that, and you couldn't make the plastic too hard. You know, if you wanted to build out something more waterproof and harder, the mouth wouldn't move. So, you know, so I think they said they had something like almost 40 heads. I think I can't remember the exact number, but they just were constantly building heads. And finally, when they stumbled upon sort of the right combination of flexible and firm and
Waterproof,
waterproof
yeah.
and so on, but they said you could get about one big mouth movement out of it, another head on. So they and so they it was Muppet Labs, you know, it was just the science
Right.
project trying to find the exact right kind of head. And then once you had it, you're only going to get about one or two uses out of it because it was going to crack. And I think it was Bonnie or some of the other builders who were saying that, you know, once the filming was done and they had several heads left over, there was great joy to be found in smashing the heads that were left over because they were so glad to be done with it.
So frustrated.
Yeah, but you know, dang, it really works on screen. But
Yeah.
it's Oz giving his all. You know, Oz tells great stories about how he would, you know, suck. He would get into a scuba suit that was the same color as the bottom of the pool. And he would just hold himself on the bottom of the pool, I think just holding a cinder block just to
Oh,
keep himself
jeez.
down. And then would just start, perform, take a big gulp of air and then perform as long as he could. The other thing he said the pool was warm. That wasn't an issue, but he said but then the room became very humid and like a rainforest. And I think it was cold outside and he got a massive ear infection
Oh, God.
from it, from just being underwater in that heat and that warm water for so long. He said it gave him a really bad ear infection from it. But you know, having the speakers underwater so Oz can hear the water at all times. But it's also, you know, the typical Muppet trip. It's careful editing. You cut away, you know, gone Kermit showing how you answer the phone. You know, you cut away before you pick the phone.
Right. Where every shot is a special effect
Every
shot.
shot is a special effect, and the swimming pool is sort of that as well. And it's to the power of Jim Henson's direction in that movie, that it all comes out so seamless. And, you know, this if you, to make the Muppets in a movie, you need a director who understands how the Muppets work. You had the guy for that one, and so I mean
Yes.
that is it is as seamless as it gets. It's so brilliantly, beautifully, and hilariously done. But like I said, Frank Oz like gave his all for that.
And so brilliantly, I'm not sure that when people went to see it, that they even that the performers even got kind of like the credit for doing all of that work.
No, and you
Because
know,
you just like it, they did it so well, you just believe that Miss Piggy is doing a water ballet.
it's Life magazine asking Miss Piggy to run along the beach. I mean, you
Yeah.
know, we went in as viewers and we're just like, oh, Miss Piggy was swimming, and we didn't appreciate how hard that was, and how hard it is to make it look. I mean, we tend to do that with most Muppet projects. We don't appreciate how actually really hard that all is.
Like where the performers are squeezed into.
Yeah.
in order to make that work.
I would love seeing the footage even of, Oz or Jim on a talk show when they're interviewing Kermit and they're kind of like screwed in underneath the seats. And I just, I posted something on Facebook recently. People were talking about how it must have just really hurt their shoulders and their arms, to perform that long with their hands over
Yeah.
their head. I always talk about how I can't, if I hang a light, over my head for 3 minutes, my shoulders are wrecked for a week.
Right.
But Oz did say famously, if you're not uncomfortable, you're doing it wrong. And boy, was he uncomfortable during the filming of Great Muppet Capers.
Yeah, for sure. And that was kind of like Great Muppet Caper then is essentially like peak moment for Miss Piggy, and I think kind of a peak moment for the Muppets as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's well known, people, that my favorite one is Muppet Takes Manhattan, actually. And one of my bigger issues with Muppet Capers, it is so Piggy centric. When she takes over, I prefer Manhattan because we're getting back to more of that mix of Muppets, and she's such a great character in Muppets Take Manhattan, and like very sweet in it, at times
Yeah.
too. So that's more the Piggy that I respond to. I'm not saying it's the right interpretation. We all know what we think is the right interpretation of Piggy, but she comes closer to what I think is the right version of Piggy in Muppets Take Manhattan.
Where she's really focused on the relationship in Muppets Take Manhattan, as opposed to kind of being the superstar. Whereas like
Yeah.
Great Muppet Caper, she wants to be famous as well as kind of relationship with Kermit. She wants to be a model. She wants everyone to look at her. And that gets real dialed down, I think, in Muppets Take
Yeah.
Manhattan.
And in Muppet Caper, I mean, she gets to come in and save the day on that one. Like she's what is the Shakespeare play? I was talking about like the characters in every scene. There's just not a moment almost that she's not on screen somehow. So and again, I know people love that movie for that.
Yeah.
It doesn't work quite as well for me. I think Manhattan's better in that regard.
I think you have to be like a real big Piggy fan. It's my favorite.
Yeah, and there are people who are, who, well, there you go. I mean, people, it's their favorite, and partly it's because if you're a Piggy fan, you're gonna love Caper.
Yep.
Like she just sends it a little over the top for me. But like you said, they as we were discussing, they knew they had lightning in a bottle, and they were gonna make the most out of it. It was striking while the iron was hot for sure. And any other cliches I could throw in, let me think of. But they really, I mean, she was the star of the moment, and so of course you're gonna go all in, and it worked fantastically.
Do you know anything about the Fantastic Miss Piggy show? This is kind of like after they decided to stop the Muppet Show. They did give her kind of one big special to kind of wrap that up.
I wish I knew more about that because that's the one that has Andy Kaufman on
Yeah,
it,
it's so odd.
in character the entire time,
Yeah.
and apparently like stayed in character almost like Daniel Day-Lewis does, like stayed in character almost the entire time that they were on. So no, I don't know much more beyond. I don't know what the intention was with that. I don't know the birth of that project. That was just one of countless ones they always had kind of going. I think it's sort of the crazy entry in all the Muppet television stuff. I mean, I think it stands out for that reason. It's really nuts.
Yeah, it's weird.
I mean that in the I mean that in the best sense. But it's so different from all of the other stuff they've done. It almost looks like a failed pilot.
Yeah.
And I don't think it was that. I think it was just another variety show. I think they just thought it was fun, in the same way you had John Denver and the Muppets and so on. I think that was what it was intended to be, is just another fun special, but it's so quirky. And
Keeping
again,
all the Muppets sort of in a control room. Like there
yeah.
is like the whole cast is here, they're just stuck in this one room that we don't see very often.
Yeah, it's a very quirky entry in the Muppet Pantheon, which I think is definitely worth watching for that reason. It's just I find that one fascinating.
And it's so fun at the end where Miss Piggy is she thinks that this is gonna be a series and she's told, no, this is just a one-off special. She's furious and she just takes the whole thing down. She karate chops the camera. It's like she pulls down the sets. Like she
Yeah.
gets so furious. She basically destroys television and then walks away.
It's ending the last episode of Sam and Friends with them dismantling the entire set and burning to the ground.
Right.
It's Jim's equivalent of ending a sketch with an explosion or something getting eaten.
Yeah.
Or Monty Python, you can't figure out how to end it, you drop a 1 ton weight on them. So this one's
Right.
like, you can't figure out how to end it, like just have Miss Piggy tear everything up. It's great.
Yeah. Can you tell me something about kind of like the relationship with Frank Oz, sort of after Muppets Take Manhattan, he starts to pull back because he's going to start working on other shows. Or I'm sorry, he's working on other movies. Like he's now going to become a director.
Right.
And he still comes back quite a bit. during the 80s, like in random places. Like he shows up as a guest on Dolly Parton's show as Miss Piggy. What was that relationship like? Can you tell me anything about kind of like as Frank and Jim are sort of starting to pull away from each other?
You mean Frank's relationship with Piggy or Frank's relationship with Jim?
Both.
So once again, you can see the power of the performer in the fact that once Oz is stepping away, they're not handing her off to anybody else.
Right.
There's no performer in wait or performer in training for her.
Yeah.
Now that I'm sure they do that nowadays because Disney's such a big entity, you need to always be sure you've got that going. I mean, that was part of what got, I think, Steve Whitmer in a tangle. But it's at that time when you're still a small enough organization. I mean, I love, it's like the Muppets worked out of a brownstone in New York. They were not this big corporation.
Right. Yeah.
So it's like you really can't have, other people that you keep on the payroll to be the swing, or to be the understudy
Right.
to Piggy. So I think, it's telling that, she only shows up when Frank shows up, and it feels very special when that does happen. When you finally see them together, but it's like Lennon and McCartney getting back together as well. Like it feels special, and you're like, oh, they were in the same room together.
Right.
It feels special when you get Jim and Frank back together, and Kermit and Piggy back together for something, whether they're just like doing the tour down at Disney World or whatever. The relationship between Jim and Frank, I mean, I think never, never changed. And that now I did somebody, I can't remember who told me this. Not David Laser. Somebody talked about, it was a, they compared it to a great marriage, but somebody said something like, I think Frank regarded it as the great love in his life, and Jim didn't necessarily regard it that way because Jim was the boss and had so many other people that he worked with. I think he knew that relationship was very special. But I think Frank, really, I mean, you have to remember how young Frank was when he started working for Jim as well, too. So I think that's why when you get them back together, it does feel very special. And I love the stories of Frank talking about when he was directing Muppet Take Manhattan, and I will use the language Frank used, and you can believe it or not. He talks about what a fucking asshole he was. He said he got very full of himself, and he said he remembered bossing Jim around at one point and was like, oh, whoa, no. He's like, I gotta dial this back.
Yeah.
And I love the footage you see of Jim talking about, oh, I can go and have a cup of tea now. Jim's like, whatever, I'll sit on stage. But there was one moment apparently when Oz tells a story about how he left everyone waiting, including Jim, a really long time for something, and was just devastated by that, by even just the, he's still to this day, the memory of it, just like he was just aghast at his own behavior at that time.
Right.
Well, I mean, I think you need, again, it's Lennon McCartney. You need like one to, you need McCartney to sort of like bring, sand the rough edges off of Lennon. I think that, they're the Lennon and McCartney story, but Jim's the, more the McCartney, sanding those rough edges off of Oz at times.
Yeah.
And Oz is the one who's, trying to keep Jim from being too saccharine. You've got that great story about during the Muppet movie when Jim says something like, do we need to redeem the villain? And Oz says, bullshit.
Yes.
He's, don't go saccharine. Your villain's your villain. Keep him that way. They were really good for each other in that regard. And Oz comes back to do the Sesame Street inserts a lot, and Jim's
Right.
got that really, really sweet statement that he makes, I think, in the late 80s, talking about how much fun it still is, and that he hopes that when he, and it's so devastating to read now, that
Yeah.
when he's in his 80s, that he and Oz will be sitting on a front porch still rocking in the rocking chairs performing Ernie and Bert. So I mean, so I think you can see the relationship even right there.
Right. And I guess that byplay of sort of Oz kind of like pushing forward and Henson kind of rubbing off the rough edges, I think that says a lot about kind of how why Piggy worked within the Muppet Show, that she has that tendency to go too far
Yeah.
and to be a bitch and possibly to be mean, and that Henson was there and Kermit was there to kind of soften that up.
That's part of what makes Piggy funny, is like she
Yeah.
does go off the edge, but you've got Kermit sort of like comes back and helps reel her in. Not that she needs the male to like help her get it under control, but in that relationship, like she's the one that's like, starts breaking the plates.
Right.
Kermit's like, who's gonna clean up this mess now? And brings her back down. And I think that you do see, I think that is sort of indicative of the Oz Henson relationship as well.
Yeah.
Just don't go, go nuts, but not too nuts. So yeah, I don't know. I'll be interested in seeing how this particular podcast progresses, Danny, as you deal with this issue as well. And especially because you and so many other Muppet fans are so much better versed in the actual episodes and the movies than I am. Like I really love watching the Piggy Kermit relationship as the Jim Frank one and the mechanics of it. And you know, that's why I started off talking about what I really loved is giving them the time to find the character. I love that side of the thing, of the story. I'm not quite as well versed, so I will be listening to figure out to see what you figure out with this. Because it's a great question. And nowadays that question I think gets harder. As we sort of stumble around saying, does she need the male figure to tell her who she can be or what she needs to do? That question is very different now than it was in 1979. So,
and that's a thing I was not actually thinking of it in that way, in that angle of that as a woman that she needs a guy as much as more personal that like Piggy needs Kermit. But that's a really good point.
Yeah, I mean, it's like who is Kermit to tell her to tone it down? Well, you know, and that's part of what makes it funny. We are dealing in fiction here, and in character study, and again, it's actually two guys playing off of each other, which I think is another weird dynamic of this. I think is it Joe Hennis? I mean, Joe's very good on talking about Piggy as a drag performer.
Yeah, that has come up. Tell me what you think about that.
Yeah, I mean. He postulates because it's a man doing it. And I do love the story about him when they were making the Muppet Show and they're doing the initial, I think it's Spike Jones, not Spike Jones.
Spike Milligan. Milligan. Yeah.
Spike Jones would have been good. Spike Milligan, when they're doing the first read through and the performers are sitting around just without the puppets and Oz starts doing Piggy and he stands up and points at Oz and it's like, it's a man. I mean, he just cannot believe it. So I think, you know, Joe and others have talked about how that makes almost her a drag type character. It's a man
Definitely.
Performing as a woman.
Yeah.
And I get that. I don't know. I think it's such a great, I think it adds another level of beauty and complexity to this character. I had not thought a lot about that until Joe brought that up. Cause to me, I was like, well, it's just somebody performing Piggy. I mean, it could be anybody. But I think that that does bring an interesting take to that character, that it's a man interpreting how a female character should act and react.
Yeah, and drag, the drag act is about kind of like overperforming the femininity. Yes. And not, it's not the same thing as like being trans, for example, where you're just like walking around in the world and not like over to, like, the drag is about like the feathers and the super feminine behavior and the voice and kind of putting on all of that stuff as kind of like partly like a critique almost of what we think of as the difference between masculine and feminine.
So like I said, I had not really thought about it that much until I heard the folks on Tough Take starting to talk about it. I think it's another really interesting, cool take on it that I don't think was, you know, had been given any deliberate thought back in, you know, 78 or whenever, you know. Because again, Piggy's not fully formed yet.
Right.
When she's invented for a very specific reason, and it is to be a back row character. And it's Oz who sort of starts to find that character again through those very deliberate and lengthy stories that he's got for her. You know, some of which shows up in the Muppet movie, you know, with her winning the beauty pageant.
The beauty contest,
That's all. Yeah, there's everybody. Yeah, that's in Oz's write up for them as well. So, you know, he's doing some of the work for the writers there, I guess, too.
There's a funny thing that she starts doing, I guess, in the 80s is whenever the concept of children come up, that she says, I'm very good with children. And that's like the end of that. Like, she, that's not a thing that she wants to talk about, but she, like, it's a thing that she wants to say.
Well, yeah, and you get that great joke where Kermit talks about a bunch of baby figs.
Baby figs. Yeah.
Yeah, I had not actually thought about that.
Which I see as part of kind of her, similar to this sort of like secret backstory that she has, where she has like a cold relationship with her mother.
Yeah.
That it's not necessarily clear that she has had a lot of models for how love and family is actually supposed to play out.
Yeah, I mean, you can actually see a lot of tragedy in Piggy's backstory that would explain, you know, her behavior and her relationships. And I, you know, there, who knows, there might be some, you know, there might be somebody who decides to do an Alan Moore take on Miss Piggy at some point, like sit down and like do all the you know, back weird, you know, sort of like reinvention of her.
Brian, thank you so much for coming on the show and talking about Miss Piggy. I really appreciate it.
This has been so great. I look forward to listening to the rest of the episodes of this to see what you find out and where you land on some of these tough issues of Miss Piggydom.
So obviously we plug Jim Henson, the biography. If there are people in the world who are listening to this, who have listened to this podcast all the way through here and have not bought and read the book yet, that is a thing you should do. And then is there anything else that you want to talk about or plug?
As I said, you can always go to my website, Brian J. Jones, and you find links to get, I've written about Washington Irving and Dr. Seuss and George Lucas. So, and all, I'm very fortunate in that all four of my books are still in print. So you can get any of those if you're interested. And right now I am currently at work on, I'm calling it a biography just because that's sort of my lane, of the U.S. Capitol. It's the day after January 6th as we're taping this, but I actually was a congressional staffer for almost a decade. And that building was and still is very important to me, but it's never had its story told in sort of a comprehensive manner beyond tour guides and visitor guides. And it's actually a lot of fun. There's a lot of crazy stories about it. And it's been, you know, there's been politics wrapped up in it. The story in Hamilton about the debate over just where it was going to be located.
Yeah.
That has been going on since along with the Capitol. It's just, it's been a lot of fun to research. It's taking me way longer to write it than I wanted to, but hopefully you'll have it in your hands next year.
Oh, that is so interesting. I was hoping you were working on something, and that is a really nice surprise that you found such an interesting.
I'm calling it Capitol : a biography. I'm sure it will be renamed before it comes out, but that's the way I'm kind of approaching that topic, is as a character.
Oh, that is gorgeous. And you have, you know, because of January 6th, you have kind of a big plot twist.
Yeah,
right at the end.
Yeah, it is funny because I did have people who say, oh, you know, it's, and I actually do know the guy because when I worked in Maryland, he was our chief of police. He's the current head of Capitol Hill Police. And they're like, oh, you should talk to Chief Manger about it. And I was like, well, this is not really a January 6th book. That's a good hook for it, but that's not really what this is about. So
thanks again to Brian, and kissy kissy, and thank you for listening to this episode of the Fantastic Miss Piggy podcast, brought to you by my friends at toughfigs.com. In the next episode, I've got another interview with the charming and stylish Muppet writer Craig Shemin, who's got all kinds of pig stories to tell, so do not miss that. A big thank you to Joe Hennis and Tough Pigs for connecting me with Brian and for running one of the two best websites on the internet. And again, special thanks to the editors of Muppet Wiki for running the other best website on the internet. If you have comments or questions, or you know stuff about Miss Piggy that you'd like to share, you can write to me at fantasticmisspiggy@gmail.com. That's fantasticmisspiggy@gmail. And please do. It's been really nice hearing from people. I'm also on X at fantasticmissp, or come and join us on the Tough Pigs Discord. Thank you, everyone. I'll see you next time.
Gee, I'd like to see you looking swell, baby. Diamond bracelets Woolworth doesn't sell, baby. Till that lucky day, you know darn well, baby, I can't give you anything but love.